Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Even though we were down in the last couple of innings, the guys are still trying to have quality bats. You know, nobody's quitting, nobody's giving up on each other. We got to continue to play the game hard, and that's what we've been doing the last two nights, you know, playing the game hard all the way to the last pitch. It's unfortunate that we lost. We still got a long way to go. We got to pick it up. Continue to fight. Teams go through a lot of ups and downs, so do players. But the only thing you can do about it is just fight, work as hard as you can, and try to be the best that you can be day in and day out.
Our record, that's what matters. You know, we've been inconsistent in a lot of areas. At the moment, we're a 500 team. So where do we go from here? Fortunately, we got a lot of baseball in front of us, but we need to get moving. The guys know that. I mean, I know that when they say pay attention to details, and you want to do it while you're really getting after it. You know, it can't just have one or the other.
Everything was working. I was able to get some quick outs and able to go eight innings. You know, I felt like my stuff is the best it's been in a Tigers uniform. They got a hit later in the game there. I fell behind 3-0, and I wasn't going to walk him, let him hit himself on. You know, the wind was kind of blowing in tonight, so I threw one over the middle. But other than that, I was pretty much in control. I mean, it's baseball. That stuff happens. You know, you got to block it out and keep executing pitches. You hope and you expect them to score some runs. And tough night offensively for us. The wind was obviously blowing in. If there's no wind or, you know, maybe a little wind blowing out, we probably have two or three home runs. You know, it happens. I mean, these guys scored tons of runs for me early in the year when I was giving up 5-6 runs and getting wins out of those games. I can't be mad at all with those guys.
I'm usually pretty good at figuring out what the score is going to be. I don't have a clue. I mean, seriously, I don't have a clue this week. You could have a score even parish, one over, two over if the wind blows, or if the weather's good, you might have 15 or 18 under. I mean, it's that kind of variable here. I think you're going to see some of the biggest differences in scores from round to round. So you're going to have a huge variance amongst the players in this field. The golf course is unusual. There's a lot of elevation change. It's a very, very difficult walk, and we're going to see a lot of areas where the ball is going to roll off of a green after a pretty good shot, and it might roll 30, 40, 50 yards away from the green. So there's some crazy stuff that can happen this week.
I think this is the biggest fight ever, and I think it breaks all pay-per-view records, not just in this country, but in other countries too. If that's the case, and it does that, then those guys are going to make a lot of money. If he knocks out Floyd Mayweather, he's the biggest athlete on any planet, not just this planet. We'll be talking about him on other planets. It would be the craziest thing that anybody has ever seen, and it would be amazing. When they step into that ring, Conor McGregor will go after Floyd Mayweather, and he will do everything in his power to try to knock him out. Will that end up making for a good fight? I don't know, but that I do know will happen.
This is a fight that Floyd is taking very, very seriously, because we all do know all it takes in boxing is one shot, and it don't have to be a clean shot. There's been a few times in fights in Floyd's career that, you know, he might have been buzzed in the fight, but nobody never knew. One thing about Conor McGregor we do know is that you got to pay him very, very close attention, because when he touches people, they fall out.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
I think I'm going to have to hear that last part one more time. The part from Leonard Ellerbe on the Mayweather fight. He's from the Mayweather camp versus Conor McGregor. Jim Kirschlin, I don't normally ask for a clip again right out of the rip. I want to get my monologue going here, but I think I might have to hear that last part one more time. If and when you are ready to fight.
In Floyd's career, that, you know, he might have been buzzed in the fight, but nobody never knew. One thing about Conor McGregor we do know is that you got to pay him very, very close attention, because when he touches people, they fall out.
When he touches people, they fall out. The problem is I've watched over and over and over again all of Conor McGregor's, well, not all of, montages, like you just heard a montage of audio sound bites. Whenever I watch montages of Conor McGregor's fights, he does knock a lot of people out. He's been a tremendous, maybe the very best that the UFC has to offer. But do you notice the difference between Conor McGregor knockouts and boxing knockouts? How do they happen? They don't happen from his feet. They happen after he knocks somebody down, then jumps on them, MMA style, as it's called, grounding and pounding them until they are knocked out, and then the official steps in and stops the fight. That's how knockouts happen in MMA. In boxing, if he knocks Floyd Mayweather down, he doesn't get to jump on him and straddle him like a schoolyard bully, making the kid down below scream, "Uncle." You don't get to straddle him with one knee on each side, pinning his arms down and making him say "Uncle" while pounding him in the face. In boxing, if you knock him down, you go to a neutral corner and allow him a chance to regain his senses and get back up. And that, my friends, is one of the main reasons why Conor McGregor will have absolutely no chance whatsoever in the super fight you just heard championed by Dana White of the UFC and Leonard Ellerby of Camp Mayweather. Camp Money May, if you will. And that's how we're going to lead the program this afternoon right here on ESPN 106.5. The ticket, we are Toledo's sports leader. Thanks for being with us. We've got Mud Hens tickets we'll be giving away a little bit later on in the program, probably at about the turn of the hour. Maybe into the next hour. Not exactly sure what time I'll do that yet, but you just have to pay attention. We'll give you a shot to do it. Got a couple of SB Nation guests who are going to be joining us. One, in about 20 minutes, Adam Stites of SB Nation. He's covering the McGregor and Mayweather fight. He doesn't like it. He doesn't think there should be one. He thinks that the Mayweather and McGregor fight is a joke, and it's a stain on boxing. I wanted to have a conversation with him, so we reached out, and he will join us at 3:35. I'm very much looking forward to that. I have a very, very big disagreement with him on that front. I think this is going to be an awful lot of fun to watch. It will not be very competitive, but it will be an awful lot of fun to watch. So I'm looking forward to talking to him about that. Then coming up at 4:05, you realize they are golfing today. The U.S. Open is underway. And how about Phil Mickelson? We're going to talk about Phil not challenging for the one major that has eluded him in his illustrious career because his daughter is graduating. How do I want to phrase this? I'm trying to find a way to say he's father of the year because he is, but golfer, golfing competitor of the year, not so much. He's giving up on a major. Phil Mickelson is not as young as springtime anymore. A little bit surprised that he is not going to go for it. Dustin Johnson, the number one player in the world, is certainly going for it, though. And how about the first round put together today by Ricky Fowler? We're keeping our eye on the leaderboard for you. We'll talk about that as we go. There are a lot of things to get into, but that'll be coming up at about 4:05. We'll have a conversation with Brendan Porath, who is covering the U.S. Open for SB Nation as well. So in between now and those conversations, you can be a part of it at 866-240-1065. You're going to buy the fight? You're going to watch the fight? Do you have any interest in the fight? Do you think the fight is a joke? Do you think it is a waste of all of our time? Because I got to tell you, being 100% honest, it is not going to be a competitive fight. But I'm not going to sit here and play holier than thou like so many people in sports media today. Oh, this is an atrocity. This is an affront to the sweet science. How can a newbie, a guy who has never even boxed before professionally, challenge the undefeated pound-for-pound champion? How can we allow this to take place? It is just, it is a bridge too far. I mean, people are really, some are really, really upset about this. And I'm asking myself about it. Well, folks, what's Floyd Mayweather done in the last 2 years? If you say nothing but continue to count his money from the Manny Pacquiao fight, you'd be right. He's done nothing. He's, for all intents and purposes, retired. What's the harm here? Is there going to be some sort of a stain on somebody's legacy if this fight happens and Floyd Mayweather beats the tar out of Conor McGregor? No. The only way there would be, and this is what really bugs me, about all the boxing purists who were really, really upset about this this prospective fight. The only thing that could really damage boxing in any way is if Conor McGregor did what nobody believes Conor McGregor is capable to do, or capable of doing. Nobody thinks Conor McGregor can beat Floyd Mayweather. I will add my name to that list because he cannot beat Floyd Mayweather, not under boxing rules, not if he is not allowed to hit him with a spinning heel kick, not if he's allowed to not hit, not unless he's allowed to hit him with a front high knee, not if he's not allowed to hit him with a roundhouse kick, roundhouse instep kick. Not if he's not allowed to jump on him and pound him into the ground MMA style with grounded pound. Not if he's not allowed, talking about Conor McGregor, to try and submit by breaking his arm or his leg or his neck or choking off his air supply. You follow the point here? This is a man, Conor McGregor, who incorporates boxing into his MMA fighting. But he is only allowed to use the boxing part in this particular fight. That means he is fighting with a handicap. That means he is fighting without 75, 80, 85% of what he could use in a fight in the octagon. It would be like telling a basketball player to play with one hand tied behind his back. You can only go right. We're taking away your left hand and trying to beat, excuse me, a more skilled basketball player who's allowed to use two hands. Floyd Mayweather is allowed to use both hands that made him the best pound-for-pound fighter of his era and one of the best pound-for-pound fighters of all time. Conor McGregor, who's not as good at that sport, now has to fight with one hand tied behind his back proverbially because he's not allowed to fight with his feet and with holds and with grappling and all of those sorts of things as well. So, if nobody believes that Conor McGregor can actually win the fight, and I'm among them, I do not believe he can, then there's no way boxing can really be damaged, truthfully, in any way, shape, or form. Boxing takes a hit in only one way. Boxing takes a hit if the greatest pound-for-pound fighter is beaten by a guy who does not know how to box, at least professionally, and is completely unprepared and unqualified to do it. It is the only way, and since that's not going to happen, people shut up and enjoy the spectacle. Now, I said this about 6 months ago maybe on these airwaves when the talk really started to get real. I mean, they've been chirping at each other for a year and a half now. Conor McGregor saying he would like to fight Floyd Mayweather. Mayweather essentially laughing it off for all the right reasons because it would be a joke. You know, they're talking about two different sports, and they're going to try to just play one of those sports, and it happens to be the one that Floyd Mayweather is the very best at. But about 3, 4, 5 months ago, it started to get a little more serious. They started talking about actual money, started talking about how we could actually pull this off, and Mayweather started to soften his stance, and it wasn't just like a joke anymore, and I predicted then what I'm going to re-predict now. As I ask you again at 866-240-1065, number one for your prediction, now that you know that this is going to happen, but number two, for your interest level in this fight, are you going to buy it? Are you going to watch it? If somebody else has it at their place, will you go watch it there if you don't have to pay for it? Because I think that's what a lot of people are concerned about, paying for something that is going to be a dud where the outcome is almost predetermined. My response to that would be, hey, do you pay pay-per-view costs or prices for WWE events? Because those outcomes are always predetermined. They're in the script. So if you watch WWE on pay-per-view, you can certainly watch this. This one we know the outcome is predetermined as well. But it is going to be an awful lot of fun leading up to and then watching how this thing plays out. Now, my prediction that I made a couple of weeks ago, that if this fight comes off, I will tell you exactly how it will end and how many rounds. There will be no knockout. Floyd Mayweather is the very best defensive fighter in the game. He manages to not get hit by some of the big heavy hitters that he has fought, even though he waited way too long to fight Manny Pacquiao, who brings thunder in both hands, and a younger Manny Pacquiao, who was quicker and stronger, might have been able to get to Floyd Mayweather, but Floyd dodged him long enough in order to make sure that a slower, weaker Manny Pacquiao was not going to be able to get him. But he's such a great defensive fighter, very few, if anybody, ever gets a clean shot on Floyd Mayweather. That will continue to be the case if he fights a non-boxing professional like Conor McGregor, when he fights him, I should say. So there will be no knockout, because Conor McGregor is not going to get close enough to him to knock him out. We know there will not be a knockout on the other side, because Floyd Mayweather doesn't knock people out. He doesn't have a lot of power, and he's so busy fighting the counterpunchers fight, the strategic fight of playing defense first and then just getting his shots in when he has to outpoint people. He's absolutely, that is his game, that is his strategy, that is what makes him the expert at his craft. He will indeed employ that against Conor McGregor, especially given the fact that Conor McGregor does have thunderous knockout power in both hands, as evidenced in his sport, albeit with the very light, you know, what, 5-ounce gloves or 4-ounce gloves or whatever they are in MMA and in the UFC, and he is allowed to, after he knocks somebody down, to jump on them to knock them out. But he does have that kind of thunderous power. Don't think for a second that Mayweather doesn't know that, which is why he's not going to try to knock McGregor out and risk getting inside and getting himself knocked out. So there will be no knockout in this fight. I do not believe there will be a knockdown in this fight. The only way I think there could be is if Mayweather zigs when he should have zagged and accidentally runs into a McGregor straight right hand. And then if he did fall down, again, Mayweather isn't being hit with McGregor's 4-ounce or 5-ounce MMA glove, which is like kind of like a bare fist. He's being hit with a 10-ounce soft padded glove. And Conor doesn't get to jump on him and pound him into submission. The referee makes him go away while Floyd gets his breath, gets his senses, and then comes back and continues to win the fight. Now, I'm not saying even that will happen. Very, very, very unlikely that there will even be a knockdown, much less a knockout, which means we're talking about a 12-round decision. And is it even any question? It'll be my prediction was a few months or weeks ago, whatever it was, the same that it is now. Now that this thing is official, Floyd Mayweather will win a unanimous 12-round decision. He will win all 12 rounds on points. It'll be one of those. What does that come to? 120, because it's 10-point scoring system. It'll be 120 to what's 9 times 12, Kush? What is that? Is that, I don't know the math, 101?
Yeah, something like that. Let me double check to make sure.
How can we not know what 9 times 12 is, for crying out loud? That's crazy.
Yeah, I think it's like 108. 100, it's 108.
Huh?
108.
108. Okay, that's better. I don't like to do live math on live radio. Ask me to conjugate a verb, and I can do that. Ask me to do a simple mathematics problem, not so much. It'll be 120 to 108. It'll be 12 rounds to nothing. Floyd will dance all over the ring and do what he does, play defense and score with jabs, play defense and score with little hooks, play defense, score with, you know, with combinations. And Conor will pursue, and Conor will pursue, and Conor will eventually start to throw wildly, trying to catch him and hope that Floyd zigs when he should have zagged and run into something, the proverbial puncher's chance, and Floyd won't. And he'll stay away, and he'll score, and he'll stay away, and he'll score. Hell, he did that to Pacquiao, and Pacquiao was 40. Conor McGregor's 28, comes from an MMA background again. Very, very powerful hitter. Floyd won't let him near him. So, if you are in agreement with me that the outcome is predetermined to be a unanimous decision for Floyd Mayweather over Conor McGregor when this fight happens on August 26th. Isn't it August 26th? Is that what they
said?
That
is correct. August 26th in Vegas.
If you are in agreement with me that this is what's going to happen, why would you buy it? And the answer is because I know it's going to happen, but the slight scintilla of a chance that something crazy happens. Like I said, the zag when he should have zigged, the zig when he should have zagged. The possibility of McGregor losing his mind in frustration. You know, throwing a wild right-handed haymaker, missing it, and then coming back instinctively with a back fist, which would be illegal. Or lifting a knee before we realize, oh crap, I can't do that. I want to see the oddity before me. And not to mention, and this is, I have to say, there is some small part of me that while I fully know what my prediction is that it'll be a Mayweather unanimous decision, I don't like Floyd Mayweather. I don't like him. I don't like the fact that he has not fought all of the people he should have when he should have fought them. I don't like the fact that he doesn't put himself in danger and actually go out there and try to fight and knock people out, that he plays defense for 12 rounds and just pokes at people and scores like that. It's not my favorite style of fighting. I don't like Money May's attitude. And I desperately have wanted to see him get knocked out for a long time, including by Pacquiao. So since I don't like Money May, and I've desperately wanted to see him get knocked out, and nobody has been doing that, well, there's only one shot left because he's essentially retired. And that would be is if Conor McGregor could do it. So to me, it's going to be a spectacle. It's going to be a feast for the eyes that is going to end up being very, very boring at the end of the day. But you're just, you know what? I've likened it to this before, and I'll do it again. You know what else I find very, very boring? And if you can't get my stupid sound effects, I'm watching a NASCAR race. And they're away from me, and here they come, they're going by me now. And that's it. It doesn't do it for me. Not a NASCAR guy. It's boring. It's the same thing. In the same way that a 12-round fight between these two guys is going to be, the same predictable thing. A NASCAR race is the same predictable thing. But what happens when somebody zigs when they should have zagged on a pass? Pow. Something that is a spectacle that the eyes, whether you want to see it or not, you will be glued to. Nobody wants to see somebody get hurt. But just like on the highway, if you're driving on I-75 someplace and you see, a car go up end over end, or if you see the aftermath of a car going end over end or something else like that, you're slowing down and rubbernecking and staring at it as long as you can. To me, that's what the fight between McGregor and Mayweather will be. Should be normal traffic. Rather boring, rather pedestrian for 12 rounds, but the idea that somebody might crash is something that's going to put me there. Not to mention the lead up to the fight, because Conor McGregor, blue language and all, profane as he can be, is about as entertaining a showman as anybody has been leading up to a fight since Ali. He doesn't do poetry like Ali did, honestly, but McGregor knows how to talk some trash, and it is going to be hilarious. For the next 3 months, or 2.5 months until that fight, it is going to be hilarious watching him try to goad Floyd Mayweather, watching him try to get in his head, watching him try to just, pick at whatever scab he can find there that annoys him. He'll make comments about his family. Hell, he may even bring race into it, although I doubt it. But who knows, you got a white Irishman like McGregor, you got Floyd Mayweather who's black, there might be something going there. Whatever it is, it's going to be very, very entertaining, and when fight night comes, I'll be watching it. I may not pay for it myself, but I will find out who's got it, and I will be there, because to me, that's what sports is all about. And the purity, because we like seeing crashes, we like seeing people pummel one another, we like contact sports, we like combative sports. Warrior sports, one-on-one gladiator matches, we like this stuff. And I'm not going to miss this one. And the boxing purists who are complaining, this guy doesn't even deserve a shot. You know who decides if McGregor deserves a shot? The guy giving him a shot. That's right. This is Floyd Mayweather's legacy, nobody else's, that will be on the line. 3:31, we'll get a timeout here. That's the monologue. Going to talk a little more about the fight coming up in just a couple. Our good man from SB Nation, Adam Stites, who says this is going to be a joke of a fight, probably shouldn't even happen. He said Mayweather will beat Conor McGregor, and it will not be close. That's fine. We're going to talk about why coming up next right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Rolling onward, are we? It's 3:37. Thanks for joining us. Real quick from ESPN this morning, resident boxing analyst Max Kellerman says not much of a fight is coming.
Conor McGregor is a pure puncher. The reason I know he's a pure puncher is because I've seen him score knockouts going backwards. That is not easy to do, to hit a guy so hard while your body is moving backward where the momentum's going the other way that you knock him out. That means you're a precise puncher for an MMA fighter. Mm-hmm. And you have real punching power. So yes, McGregor is a pure puncher. He has natural punching ability. I'm a great admirer of Conor McGregor's not only technique, but fighting spirit. As Dana White will tell you, you need to make a big event. A guy drops out last minute. McGregor, will you move up and wait to fight that guy? Sure, let's get it on. You want to do an immediate rematch? Damn right I do. Love everything about McGregor that way, and I love the way he promotes. I'm a big McGregor fan. And if he had been boxing this whole time, maybe we'd be having a different story. But you ain't going to pick it up in 3 or 6 months and hit Floyd. Let me tell you what's going to happen. Conor McGregor will not land a single punch against Floyd Mayweather. Not one punch.
Wow. Now that is what I call a strong take. By the way, I once saw Jim Cushlin knock somebody out falling backwards. He fell over drunk and knocked himself out. Adam Stites joining us now. Adam Stites is with SB Nation. He's normally their NFL writer. He is now an MMA writer, at least for today. MMA / boxing / contact sports. And I read his piece this morning on SB Nation. I said, we got to talk to this man. This should be an interesting conversation. Adam, how are you? Thanks for joining us here in Toledo.
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you. Hey, you know, I want to talk about the boxing purists before we get into the real reason for this fight, which, as you pointed out correctly in your article, is money. I mean, it's a massive amount of money that Floyd Mayweather is going to get, and it's more money than Conor McGregor has ever earned in the MMA, obviously, and that's why this is going to happen. But, Adam, what do you make of all of the boxing purists complaining and whining about, oh, my God, this is such a stain on the integrity of the sport. The sweet science is not meant to be treated like this. This is a guy who's not even a professional boxer. All he did was box a little bit as an amateur before going in MMA, getting a shot at the undefeated Floyd Mayweather. This is an affront to all things holy in our sport. I've heard way, way more than that of that than I care to. Is there anything wrong, in your opinion, Adam, with having this fight from a boxing standpoint?
No, I don't think so. If anything, this is a question that has been around for a long, long time, and now we'll finally get to answer it. Everybody's wondered, boxing fans have always said that the level of boxing in MMA is just far below that of boxing. And so now they finally get to answer that question, see how, big is that gulf. This is probably the best, pure boxer in MMA, in Conor. He wins with his hands, and now you're going to get to see, how dramatic is that difference. So, I can see why they would think that this is kind of insulting that a guy jumps straight to the biggest draw in boxing, but, it's a chance to get some questions answered, and for that, at least, I'm curious to see.
Yeah, that's well said. And what's bothering me, Adam, is the same thing that some of the baseball purists complained about when Tim Tebow went into the minor leagues, with the Mets. Oh, my God, he's taking somebody else's shot away. He's taking somebody else's chance to play a baseball away who would be on that roster, all because he's famous and this is garbage and blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking to myself, well, if that other guy, whoever he's taking the shot away from, was any good, he would have already been on that A roster. I mean, my goodness, we're talking about guys who come and go through a turnstile at that level of baseball. They come and they decide they're not going to make it and they quit, etc. That's what it feels like boxing is arguing, as if somebody else should have had a shot here at Floyd Mayweather. And the fact of the matter is, Floyd Mayweather's been essentially retired, inactive for 2 years. Nobody was, quote, getting a quote-unquote shot at him. And it's not like Conor McGregor is fighting for Floyd Mayweather's title, whereas, the number one contender has been passed over for a title shot against Floyd Mayweather by a guy from another discipline who's not even an actual boxer. If that was the case, I could see some of the angst. But since this is just a pride, man on man, hey, I think I can beat you, no, you can't, and there'll be a couple of $100 million in it for each of us to find out, there's really no downside here, and boxing cannot possibly be hurt by this unless Floyd Mayweather actually lost.
Yeah, I agree with you. And boxing doesn't have a whole lot of big main events where they're on a big stage like this. This is a chance for them to draw a lot of eyeballs. And so in that regard, boxing, I think, wins. MMA had a pretty similar situation not too long ago when CM Punk went from WWE into the UFC, and there was a lot of people making those same exact complaints. So how does a guy go from never having a fight to the main event of a pay-per-view in the UFC? So and it was the same kind of complaints there, but ultimately, if you can draw more eyeballs to the sport, then I think it's good for the sport, and it raises the pay of everybody in the sport. So I can see where the complaints come from, but ultimately I think it's a win for boxing just to have a giant stage like this.
Yeah, I do too. They do have their own giant stage coming up later this fall, as you know, with Triple G and Canelo Alvarez, which is a fight that everybody has been waiting to see. But why not have two? You know, why not have two huge moments to showcase, you know, the biggest names? Because, again, Floyd was done. Floyd didn't have anybody else to fight. I'm not a huge Floyd fan because he waited 5, 6, 7, 8 years too long to fight, excuse me, for the super fight with Manny Pacquiao. But the bottom line is he did fight him, and that's over with now. And there is nobody else really left for him to fight. So if you want to see the, you know, the greatest star in boxing, you know, 49-0, Floyd Mayweather, this is really your only chance to see him. And you add the novelty of one of the great promoters in individual sports working today in Conor McGregor, and it is a positive opportunity for boxing with the rare, you know, chance that he would actually lose. Then boxing does take a big hit because its greatest star lost a fight to a non-boxer. And it would really, really give a massive amount of credibility to the MMA and take even more fans away. And there are already enough of those leaving boxing to go and watch mixed martial arts.
Yeah, I agree with that. And that's probably the worst case scenario for boxing is that, you know, there's the only way to get a win out of this is if Floyd wins this fight, but has to win pretty dominantly. At this point, if he gets dropped, it's a gigantic loss for boxing. I mean, no. Canelo couldn't drop him. You know, there are different circumstances. He's 40 now. He's taken a 2-year layoff. But at this point, he has to win, you know, handily. He has to probably win every single round. Otherwise, it's a bad look for boxing.
Yeah, there's no question about it. We're talking about the McGregor-Mayweather agreed-upon fight now for August 26th. You say that this fight only came together because of money. And you're right. You're 100% right in your article. As I read it, though, I almost detected a hint of it shouldn't be happening because of that. Your headline, not that you wrote your own headline on the website at SB Nation, but Floyd Mayweather should be Conor McGregor and it shouldn't be close. It won't be close. Are you arguing that there's really no reason for this to happen? I know you've said that it could help boxing, but is this something that you think is a negative for combat sports, or is this a net gain for combat sports?
You know, like I said, I think it's a question that everybody kind of wanted answered for a while. Andre Arlovsky was the UFC heavyweight champion at one point, and there was talks about him possibly boxing. Anderson Silva is one of the all-time best in MMA, and there's always been chatter about him against Floyd Jones Jr. So I think at some point in time, this was a question that we needed to get answered. So, you know, it's a little bit of a silly fight. There's a lot of top contenders in the UFC that I'd love to see Conor fight. But this is probably a fight that needed to happen at some point, something like this. So, you know, let's get it out of the way.
Should McGregor have had to go through somebody who's 32-10 before he gets to the guy who's 49-0? Just give him, even if you want to call it a tune-up fight, and that shouldn't be. I mean, really, when you got a guy who has never fought a professional boxing match in his life, who is used to using his legs as striking, you know, weapons, as well as his knees, as well as his hands. To me, it wouldn't even be called a tune-up fight. It would be a test to see, can you beat a guy with 10 losses before you get into a ring with none? Get into the ring with a guy, I should say, with none.
Yeah, if Conor wanted to go be a boxing champion and really become a name in boxing, that would probably be the way to go. But I don't think that's what he's doing here. This is just... you know, Floyd's a big name, Conor's a big name, and let's see what happens. And so, you know, when I say it's about money, that's the only way that this fight makes sense, is money. If Conor really wanted to go after, names in boxing and prove himself in boxing, that would probably be the better way to go. Go through, you know, some mid-level fighters before he, you know, goes after the top. But the top is where the money's at, and so that's why this fight is happening.
What kind of money are we talking about here, Adam? Do you know what's the projection for each guy?
It is undisclosed, so it's a guess. But Floyd made $220 million from the Manny Pacquiao fight.
Right.
It's going to depend on the pay per views, but I would say he's definitely over six figures. I would think, you know, $150 million maybe, and then for Conor, it's probably less than that. He also doesn't own the promotion that Floyd does, so there's a big cut taken out of it there.
Sure.
So Conor probably comes away maybe 80 million, 90 million, which is, you know, triple what he's made in his last two fights combined.
Right. And by the way, that's nine figures, not six, when you talk about 150 million for Floyd,
which
is just, it's really hard to even imagine. You're right. It'll clearly be the biggest payday that McGregor has ever had and probably ever will have, win, lose, or draw. So let's talk about the actual fight now. We know, as I kind of said before, this is almost like two different sports. They're not really, because boxing is incorporated into one, so it's not like this is apples and chairs in terms of comparison. But since, and I talked about this in my own analysis earlier before I get yours, you know, Conor McGregor has tremendous knockout power in his sport. But in his sport, they're wearing, what, four-ounce gloves, which is, you know, almost essentially being punched with a bare fist to the face. That's one difference, and they're going to have, I think, 10-ounce gloves in this fight, which means his powerful punch will not have the same effect on the face of Floyd Mayweather as it would on, you know, one of his opponents in UFC. And secondly, all of his knockouts, like everybody else in the UFC and in MMA, if you knock a guy off his feet with a shot, you then get to jump on him and pound him into the ground while he's laying there before the referee comes in and stops it. And in this fight, if Conor McGregor was fortunate enough to catch Floyd Mayweather with a lucky shot, you have to move away to a neutral corner. You don't get to jump on him and fight and knock out the way you were used to knocking people out. And that to me, is at the end of the day, the biggest disadvantage for Conor McGregor. He can't knock a guy out if he wants to the way that he is used to.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, he's had fights where he's had multiple knockdowns. That Eddie Alvarez fight, his most recent one, he had five knockdowns in an 8-minute fight. So he didn't really finish him on the ground. I think his, fight against Nate Diaz made him a little more hesitant to, you know, dive into somebody's guard.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you know, like you said, it's probably not going to be a single punch that he'd have to put him to sleep, you know, face down to have any kind of one punch KO. And you know, obviously Floyd's never been KO'd. He's never, you know, really ever been dropped. So it's a uphill climb for sure.
Am I right on the gloves? Isn't it like 4-ounce gloves that they're using in the MMA?
Right, it's 4 ounces in the UFC, and then it would be if they're going to be fighting with 10-ounce gloves. 10-ounce
gloves. Boxing. Right. So, I mean, that's such a massive difference in terms of punching power for Conor McGregor. So what's your prediction for this fight? You know, as I read your piece today, which is why we contacted you, you know, you said, does McGregor have any chance? And you said, well, maybe. He'll almost definitely lose, and he probably won't even touch Mayweather. I just played for you the clip from Max Kellerman, boxing analyst at ESPN, saying he doesn't think McGregor will land a single punch on Mayweather, the great defensive fighter that he is. What is your prediction for the fight, Adam Stites?
I don't think Max Kellerman was too far off. I'd probably say something similar. You know, Canelo Alvarez, who's the pound-for-pound best right now, fought 12 rounds with Floyd and landed, you know, 120 punches fewer. I can't imagine Conor doing a better job than Canelo Alvarez. It's just that if Canelo can't do it, I don't see how Conor McGregor could. So I don't think he lands zero punches. He probably lands zero clean punches across the chin, but I think it's probably Floyd wins every round and you know, just, I think it's probably going to be a frustrating night for Conor where he just can't seem to land a shot. I don't think he gets knocked out. I don't think Conor gets finished. I think it's just a frustrating fight for him where he loses by unanimous decision.
Are you going to cover the fight for SB Nation?
I hope so, yeah. We have a lot of MMA journalists who are probably going to be there as well, but you know, I'm in Phoenix. It's not a far trip for me, so yeah, I hope to be there.
If you weren't covering the fight with a press credential, would you buy the fight on pay-per-view?
Yeah, I would. I think it's an interesting enough fight that just, you know, even for the freak show factor, it's an interesting fight. Whether you think it deserves to be going on or not, it's going to answer a lot of questions, and Conor McGregor is always worth tuning in for. He's never been in a boring fight in his life.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And after hearing your prediction, it's interesting. You literally stole my answer word for word, and I think really anybody who's reasonable would agree. There will be no knockout in this fight. because McGregor cannot get close enough to Mayweather to knock him out, Mayweather being the great defensive fighter that he is, especially against an amateur who has never been a professional boxer like McGregor. And Mayweather's not going to try to knock out McGregor because if he does try to knock him out, he's got to get in close and take big, hard shots. And then it opens himself up to that power of McGregor, and he's not going to risk that. He'll do what he did with Pacquiao and dance for 12 solid rounds, continuing to rack up points on jabs and hooks and never let himself get into any kind of a trouble, which means it's going to be very boring. It's going to be 12 rounds, unanimous decision, 120 to 108. Floyd Mayweather will win. There will be no knockdowns. There will be no knockouts, and the entirety of the fight will be boring. Yet it is a spectacle that I, too, knowing it will be boring, will plunk my money down for. I want to watch this thing. Ever since we all saw Rocky take on Hulk Hogan, a.k.a. Thunderlips in Rocky III, the fighter or the puncher versus the, you know, the wrestler, or in this case, the mixed martial arts type of a thing, has been so, you know, such a curiosity for so many. I want to see it, even though I am pretty sure I know exactly what the outcome is going to be. Do you expect it to set pay-per-view records?
Yeah, I think so. I think this, Dana White said that he thinks that this has a bigger draw than Manny Pacquiao, and I think it probably does as well, just because it draws in, MMA fans. I think there's probably plenty of people who are insulted, maybe the boxing purists, as you said, but, they can say that, but I think they'll be watching it when the fight rolls around just because they want to see the MMA fighter get lit up. So I do think it draws from two sports and probably does set the pay-per-view record.
I don't think either one of these guys are very popular with the general public. I mean, they're very well known. What I mean is they're not very liked by a lot of people. I mean, I can't stand Floyd Mayweather. I was rooting for Manny Pacquiao. I've been rooting for pretty much everybody who fought Floyd Mayweather for the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years. I'm just not a fan of the whole money may thing. I'm not a fan of the businessman money thing where all he cares about is money. He doesn't put himself in jeopardy by going to try to knock people out. He just plays that defensive fighting game. He waited, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years past Manny Pacquiao's prime to give him that dream shot that we all wanted to see. So I'm not a fan of Floyd, and I want to see somebody knock him out. And there's a lot of people who are not fans of Conor McGregor. He uses a lot of profanity, a lot of blue language. He's very, very much a self-promoter, which has made him the most popular guy in the UFC in that regard. But, for fight fans who hate the UFC, they're going to really hate Conor McGregor. And for UFC fans and just non-Mayweather fans, somebody's going to lose here. And the chances are we know who it's going to be. But the fact that somebody we don't like is going to lose is probably going to make a lot of people buy this thing just to watch the person they don't like go down.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Conor probably has a bigger fan base than Floyd does. But Conor's the one who's probably going to lose, and a lot of people are going to want to see him lose. Even there's a gigantic amount of UFC fans who would love see Conor get let up too. So yeah,
he'll have an entire nation behind him. He'll have all of Ireland behind him. But the fight's in Vegas. It's not in Dublin or someplace. Yeah. So, if it was there, it might be a different story. But the momentum, even it probably wouldn't be anyway. But he will have an entire nation behind him for whatever that's worth. All right, good stuff. Adam Stites from SB Nation, normally an NFL writer, but covering the fight and the pre-hype of the fight, if you will. Now that it has been agreed upon, Adam, thanks for the time. We appreciate your conversation here in Toledo.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You got it. Have a great one. All right, there you go. Excuse me. I don't smoke, I swear to God. But I've got a smoker's cough that's driving me crazy. I cannot seem to shake this cough. I apologize for doing that into your speakers. I really don't intend to. But back to the point here. Nobody really likes, or there aren't a whole lot of people that like Money May. And there are a whole lot of people that want to see Conor McGregor because he's got maybe the biggest mouth in the fight game of any kind, boxing or MMA. They would like to see him get his mouth shut. So there are going to be a lot of people who want to see their guy they dislike the most lose, and they're hoping that McGregor can just throw a shot that Mayweather just kind of zigs into instead of zagging, and then we have a really, really shocking thing on our hands. But I'm going to say this. While I firmly believe that it will be a 12-round unanimous decision for Money May, based on all the reasons I described in this hour, back in 1989, I want to say? I think it was in 1989. I was sure that Mike Tyson was going to go over to Tokyo and destroy a big fat guy named James Buster Douglas, too, who had no chance to land a shot on the undefeated, on the chin of the undefeated Mike Tyson. Iron Mike Tyson.
It was actually in 1990, just in February.
Damn it, I was a year off.
So you were technically, yeah, not much, though.
Pretty sure that then the untouchable, unimaginable Mike Tyson, at the peak of his powers, remember, after dusting Michael Spinks and unifying the heavyweight championship, Spinks had beaten Holmes. Here comes Tyson, beating Michael Spinks and unifying the belts in 1988. Then spending about every 3 months beating another heavyweight contender, whether it's Terrell Biggs or if it's, who was the other real big, strong, tall fighter? That he just took apart. I can't remember all Tyson's record off the top of my head now. Doesn't matter. The point is, though, he's just knocking guys' blocks off left and right. They're defeated before they get into the ring because of the intimidation factor of Mike Tyson. He's going over to Tokyo in February 1990. Another big, tall, kind of doughboy type of fighter, or at least that's how he was perceived prior to this fight. Buster Douglas, come on. And Buster Douglas throws one of the most improbable punches that wrecks Mike Tyson's career. Not his fight, not his night, his career. Because the aura was over after that. He never got that fear, that intimidation and fear factor back after James Buster Douglas took him apart in Tokyo. And it wasn't just a one-punch lucky thing. I mean, we all know, you know, what led up to that. Tyson really didn't train seriously. He wasn't motivated by this guy. He was a little bit out of shape. Douglas was incredibly motivated. I think his mother had just died like a month before the fight, and he dedicated the fight to her. He trained like a demon and had the perfect game plan, and it was just the perfect upset. But that was the most shocking upset probably in the history of boxing. Probably. I'd have to go back and see. So because it happened, you cannot say that it's impossible for it to happen again. It's not impossible for Conor McGregor, professional fighter, but non-professional boxer, to throw the one haymaker or the one uppercut that Mayweather never sees coming. And it's possible that Mayweather overlooks this guy because he has just about as much a chance of winning as Buster Douglas did against Mike Tyson and doesn't train properly, doesn't prepare properly, knows he doesn't need his best fight game, his best defensive game plan to beat this guy because he's so clumsy and awkward in there compared to real professional boxers. And he doesn't quite do it right. And here comes McGregor. And that's why I'm going to buy the pay-per-view. Would love to talk to you about it. If I see you're on hold. I do see some people there, but I'm going to ask you to bear with me. Let me get to our quick time out here. Top of the hour, Sports Center. We'll come back and take your calls on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
We are...
Even though we were down in the last couple of innings, the guys are still trying to have quality bats. You know, nobody's quitting, nobody's giving up on each other. We got to continue to play the game hard, and that's what we've been doing the last two nights, you know, playing the game hard all the way to the last pitch. So unfortunately, we lost. We still got a long way to go. We got to pick it up. Continue to fight. Teams go through a lot of ups and downs, so do players. But the only thing you can do about it is just fight, work as hard as you can, and try to be the best that you can be in and out.
Our record, that's what matters. You know, we've been inconsistent in a lot of areas. At the moment, we're a 500 team. So where do we go from here? Fortunately, we got a lot of baseball in front of us. But we need to get moving. The guys know that. I mean, I know that when they say pay attention to details. And you want to do it while you're really getting after it. You know, you can't just have one or the other.
Everything was working. I was able to get some quick outs and able to go 8 innings. You know, I felt like my stuff is the best it's been in a Tigers uniform. They got a hit later in the game there. I fell behind 3-0, and I wasn't going to walk him, let him hit himself on. You know, the wind was kind of blowing in tonight, so I threw one over the middle. But other than that, I was pretty much in control. I mean, it's baseball. That stuff happens. You know, you got to block it out and keep executing pitches. You hope and you expect them to score some runs. And tough night offensively for us. The wind was obviously blowing in. If there's no wind or, you know, maybe a little wind blowing out, we probably have two or three home runs. You know, it happens. I mean, these guys scored tons of runs for me early in the year when I was giving up 5-6 runs and getting wins out of those games. I can't be mad at all with those guys.
I think this is the biggest fight ever, and I think it breaks all pay-per-view records, not just in this country, but in other countries too. If that's the case, and it does that, then those guys are going to make a lot of money. If he knocks out Floyd Mayweather, he's the biggest athlete on any planet, not just this planet. We'll be talking about him on other planets. It would be the craziest thing that anybody has ever seen, and it would be amazing. When they step into that ring, Conor McGregor will go after Floyd Mayweather, and he will do everything in his power to try to knock him out. Will that end up making for a good fight? I don't know, but that I do know will happen.
This is a fight that Floyd is taking very, very seriously, because we all do know all it takes in boxing is one shot, and it don't have to be a clean shot. There's been a few times in fights in Floyd's career that, you know, he might have been buzzed in the fight, but nobody never knew. One thing about Conor McGregor we do know is that you got to pay him very, very close attention, because when he touches people, they fall out.
I'm usually pretty good at figuring out what the score is going to be. I don't have a clue. I mean, seriously, I don't have a clue this week. You could have a score even parish, one over, two over if the wind blows, or if it's a nice, if the weather's good, you might have 15 or 18 under. I mean, it's that kind of variable here. I think you're going to see some of the biggest differences in scores from round to round. So you're going to have a huge variance amongst the players in this field. The golf course is unusual. There's a lot of elevation change. It's a very, very difficult walk, and we're going to see a lot of areas where the ball is going to roll off of a green after a pretty good shot, and it might roll 30, 40, 50 yards away from the green. So there's some crazy stuff that can happen this week.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And we are rolling right along. The montage obviously indicated we got a lot still to cover here in this hour of the extravaganza. Really good conversation with Adam Stites of SB Nation, talking the fight game with Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather finally getting it settled. We're going to go back to SB Nation in just a second with Brendan Porat, who's covering the U.S. Open. But I want to get a quick call in, because Joe in Grand Rapids had something quick on the fight that I do not want to make wait much longer. Hey, Joe, go right ahead.
Hey, you know, the way I look at it, it's almost a lose-lose for boxing. I mean, if Floyd beats Conor and does what everybody expects him to do, then that's what everybody expects him to do. And if Conor catches Floyd and knocks him out, there's not much worse that could happen to boxing than that.
Agreed on the latter, but not the former. You're right. If Conor somehow rips one upside the head of Floyd Mayweather and knocks him out, yes, it's a huge loss for boxing. But if Floyd beats him, it's not a loss for boxing. It's a win for boxing. And it's about a $200 million win for Floyd Mayweather, which is all he really cares about anyway. Boxing isn't hurt by Floyd Mayweather beating up an amateur. It's just kind of a spectacle, and everybody else goes on about their business getting ready for Triple G and Canelo Alvarez.
Oh, yeah. Do you remember maybe about 10 years ago, James Toney went into the UFC and fought a 46-year-old former two-time heavyweight champ and former one-time light heavyweight champ, Randy Couture.
Yes, I do.
And he didn't even get to square up with him. He didn't even get a punch off. He got within range, and Randy single leg takedown, took him down, ground and pound, and the fight was over very quickly.
And that's exactly what would happen if Floyd Mayweather were going into the octagon. Conor McGregor would destroy him because of striking with hands and feet, something Floyd Mayweather would have no idea how to defend. And that's why, to me, it's the same thing here, because he cannot use those things, including ground and pound, which he is very, very good at, talking about Conor. That's why Floyd Mayweather, of course, is going to win a unanimous 12-round decision. Neither guy will knock the other guy down, let alone out, because of the nature of their skills. And Floyd Mayweather will win a breezy, yawning 12-round decision. It won't hurt boxing. It'll just make Floyd Mayweather richer. Hey, Joe, I got to run, my friend. I'm sorry I got to cut the conversation short. But we do have golf scheduled for this segment, so let's bring in Brendan Porath, who's covering the U.S. Open at Erin Hills for SBNation.com. And first of all, thanks for joining us this afternoon, Brendan. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for having me, Bob. Appreciate it.
It's a pleasure to have you here in Toledo. Thanks very much for making the time. Boy, what a start today for Ricky Fowler. You know, you just heard a clip there from Andy North at the end of our top-of-the-hour montage, talking about how scoring is going to be tough, et cetera. Not so much. Ricky Fowler threw a 7 and minus 7 on the card today at 65. Brian Harman and Tommy Fleetwood and Brooks Koepka also at minus 5. Are you surprised at the scoring we're seeing in the first round of the tournament?
Yeah, I think I am. I mean, you got to be. It's always a little jarring to see a U.S. Open guy at 7 under after just 18 holes. You know, that's just not what we're accustomed to with the U.S. Open. We might see it at a Masters or a PGA or Open Championship, but not a U.S. Open. You know, we had some inkling that this might, like Andy was saying, it's hard to predict. Like, you might get a number like that because it's a soft course and the fairways are wider, but it's still a little odd to see at a U.S. Open. And, of course, I mean, it's just one day. You know, Fowler's number at 7-under could be close to the winning number after another 54 holes. We saw that at Chambers Bay 2 years ago. I think the first-round leader shot a 65, which is what Fowler shot. I think the winning number was 4-under. So you never know. That could come back down, and we might just have to hold on here for the last 3 days.
Yeah, I don't know why I feel that way, but I do. I feel like exactly what you just said is what's going to happen. A number like that is going to win. Maybe 8, maybe 6, maybe
right.
9-under. But this isn't going to continue. He's not going to go Tiger Woods at the Masters and go 18-under just because it got off to the start. The course is going to come back. The question is who's going to be able to make the moves to get down there where he is? You know, looking at guys like Jordan Spieth, who had a very, you know, kind of an odd, one-over par today in his first round. You know, he's among the favorites in this thing, the world number 6. So who do you, you know, from what you saw and have seen so far, and there's still some guys playing, who do you see kind of joining Ricky with those low numbers going into rounds 2 and then into the weekend?
I think Rory, we're watching him right now. He got an eagle on his second hole and then, of course, missed one on the third hole mm-hmm. to give it right back. I love Rory this week. I know there's some questions about his health and rust after, you know, he hasn't really played at all this year. A couple of competitive events, and when he's come back, he's re-injured his rib. I think he's won this afternoon. Now he's going to be playing in some tougher conditions. It looks like it's going to be windier and just more dried out and firm and fast for these late guys. But I love Rory. I still, like you mentioned with Spieth, I think that was just kind of a fluke day where nothing went in for him, and I think you can't expect that to happen again. I could see Jordan posting, you know, a 4-under tomorrow, and he's right back in it, you know, right back in the hunt and doing that again on Saturday. I just, Spieth, and it's, these aren't kind of long shot names, Rory and Spieth, but I love them to kind of be there over the weekend.
Sergio's off to a good start, 2 through 5. He is at -2, and of course, he's coming off the green jacket for the first time in his career. What kind of a mindset do you think he comes into this with, you know, after finally getting that first major off of his, you know, I shouldn't say off his back, the jacket went on his back, but you understand the point, the monkey off the back.
Sure.
By finally getting that done, is he a different player? Does he approach a tournament, a major, differently now than he did before he finally got that?
Oh, I think you have to. I think he has to. And as we know with Sergio, so much of the battle seems to always be involved with him, right? And especially at an event like a U.S. Open or a Masters. There's always that mental burden. He gets really hot under the collar, and, you know, he's kind of curbed late in his career. But it's always a mental battle. He's always some self-doubt there. And he's really opened himself up in that way and told us about that in the past. But I think with a major under your belt, you got to be a totally new person. That was kind of the defining characteristic of his career, whether he liked it or not. You know, it's always like, why don't you have a major? Where's your major? Are you going to get it this week? And that's kind of all gone now. It has to be total refocus and reshifting in a good way. And oddly enough, the season's first, you know, major winner is flown under the radar here a little bit because, you know, we kind of default like, oh, big court, DJ, Jason Day, Rory, Spieth will be there. And we've kind of forgotten about Sergio. Well, he's having a fantastic year aside from the Masters win. Obviously, that's a career highlight. But he's still striping it, as Sergio does every year, and he's kind of just snuck in under the radar here, where he has a great opportunity, what we saw Spieth do 2 years ago, and take the first two legs of the slam.
You know, that's exactly what I was about to follow up with. You know, Spieth and Nicklaus and Palmer and Tiger, the only individuals to win the first two legs of the slam since 1960. That's an awful lot to ask of a guy like Sergio, whose, you know, first career major was, you know, some 20 years in the making since he turned pro.
Right, but he's always there. And he, again, like, it sounds like this venue really is so accentuates the ball striking. He's hitting it out there with Bubba. He's hit 330. He's hitting it with these guys. This is right there. I mean, we saw him hit an 8-iron into 15 at Augusta to win the Masters. That's a par 5. So I think he's hitting it as far as he can, as far as these other guys, and he remains one of the best ball strikers in the game. And that's what this this venue is all about. The greens are so perfect that it almost kind of evens the playing field here. There's, you know, some of the bad putters can really kind of keep up here because they're rolling so true and so perfect that, you know, and Sergio's not a bad putter, but that's obviously the weakness of his game. But I think he's got the perfect toolbox for this course.
We're talking to Brendan Porath, who's covering the U.S. Open for SBNation.com at Erin Hills. You mentioned DJ, the world number one. Not now. He's U.S. Open number 116, if you're scoring at home. he's plus three, had a disaster on his back nine, 14, 15, 16, 17. Actually, he birdied 16, but in that run there, that's when he went three over. What happened to DJ during that stretch?
My highly technical analysis is he shaved his beard. Like Samson, I can't believe he, I can't believe he shaved. It was a little odd to see him this morning walking out there with, you know, smooth baby face skin. It was a little jarring, but I don't know. I think, Dustin, unfortunately, that fall at the Masters has thrown his year all off. It just seemed so unbeatable there, you know, going for his third straight win at Augusta before he fell down and stuff. We saw him in Columbus at the Memorial just kind of explode, blow up and take an early exit there. I thought his round today was more surprising than Spieth or anyone else's so far. I just, again, he had a child on Monday, so he came in a little late, but he had practiced a ton prior to that. You know, he knew that was coming, and he got it in last week. So he just, again, he said he loved the course. He was able to hit his driver as much as he wants, as much as he can at a U.S. Open. It's just he's been a little sloppy since that Masters injury, and some of the putts aren't falling.
We're talking to Brendan Porath, talking about the U.S. Open today. The defending champion, Dustin Johnson, off to a rough start today. He is now 10 strokes back, believe it or not, of Ricky Fowler, who went out and threw a 65 on the card today. Brendan, our man Jim Cushlin here, who talked to you earlier, is got a question for you. Let me go ahead.
And, you know, not just 10 shots back, but I'm kind of astonished, to be honest with you guys, considering this is the U.S. Open. Yeah, it's only the day one, but I'm kind of astonished there's 41 guys at under par. I'm not even counting the evens. So, in a way, you almost have some fireworks going on the course. But before we end this eventually, I got to ask you, what happened with this thing earlier today? There's a blimp that crashes off the course, an advertising blimp or something. Any other information that they've been saying? I mean, what exactly happened with that? And did it affect anybody? Because I know I saw a video. Somebody was trying to, because they couldn't get to the practice range or something, they were practicing in their backyard or something. What's going on with that? What happened?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously a really scary scene here. This advertising blimp, not associated with the Fox broadcast, caught fire, went down. When it went down, it exploded. The pilot, apparently, according to Milwaukee Journal Sentinel over in Wisconsin, the pilot took it to ground. There had been reports that he parachuted out, things like that, but I think he was too low. He took it to ground. From what I understand, he's got some burns. We don't know what degree and how severe, but there are burns, and we're kind of holding out hope, and, you know, he is conscious and okay. As far as the players, some quotes are coming out now that, you know, they thought play might be stopped. I saw Jamie Lovemark, who's a big hitter in the field, said, you know, he was on the tee box and saw it going down. His caddy pointed out he was terrified. Like, I thought they were going to stop play. I've never seen anything like that in my life. So, you know, this is a wide open field, and it sounds like everybody on the grounds could see it. It's kind of harrowing and obviously a little bizarre.
Yeah, and a little reminiscent of the Hindenburg, obviously, you know, the first dirigible that infamously went in up in flames, what was that, like in 1937, somewhere in that neighborhood?
Right.
You know, you see the images of that blimp on fire like that. That's what it calls to mind. And by the way, on the pilot, you're right. He did take it to ground and, in fact, has suffered some pretty serious injuries, including burns, according to investigators, literally within the last hour. Statement from the Washington County Sheriff's Office there says the blimp may have experienced mechanical problems before the crash, and they updated the pilot's condition where he did suffer some serious injuries, including burns. So really a terrifying thing, something you just don't expect to see at a golf tournament. But back to the course, just a couple of other thoughts here before we let you run, Brendan. We appreciate your time. You mentioned Spieth as somebody you can say making a run. You also just kind of in passing said Jason Day's name. What are you seeing from him on day one that you know that gives you an idea of where he'll be over the week or as we get to the weekend?
Well, Well, as we were talking, he was just making a mess. I had it on the background. He's making a mess with his wedges. I just don't know that Jason's been comfortable yet this year. Now we saw some improved play from him at the Players. I think he's just not had it, you know, the form, that the kind of run that we saw, which was a Tiger-like run, you know, for a, you know, Tiger-like 10 years and not right. 10 months like Jason Day. But he just hasn't been able to pull it together this year. And I think, oddly enough, in the press conference the other day, he was asked about, he does that whole visualization thing, you know, where he closes his eyes and takes quite a bit to hit a shot. I think, oddly enough, a lot of the blind shots have flustered him here. He can't really do that visualization. He was asked about this in the press conference the other day and didn't have a great answer and seemed a little flustered. So I'm not sure the venue sets up as well for him like it does the other long hitters. I you know, he's got the talent to win any tournament he starts, but I'm not as bullish on him.
If Dustin comes back and wins this, and again, he's going to be 10 down, or he is 10 down, you know, after day one from the leader, from Ricky Fowler, he would be the first repeat champion since Curtis Strange. Is it possible? I mean, when I say that, let me rephrase it to probable. Is it likely that he can do this? Because Ricky Fowler would have to kind of fall off the cliff in the next day or two in order for DJ to make up 10 strokes, and I don't know if that's going to happen. I still don't think Fowler's going to go up and throw another 7-under tomorrow and be at 14, as I said.
No.
But certainly Dustin can catch fire. Do you think is he out of it already at 10 behind the leader on day one?
No, I don't think you could say he's out of it. I think he could, you know, shoot 67 twice and be, you know, right back in it, you know, 7-under. I think you've got that kind
Assuming
of talent.
Assuming Fowler stays around par both of those days, then.
Right. I think the problem, maybe even more than Fowler, is what Jim mentioned with, like, 41 guys under par, too. It's like a big group to jump. And you know some of those guys are going to jump up the board, too. It's going to be a big challenge for DJ. He's one of the few that could probably do it, though.
Last thing I have to ask you about Phil. What do you make of his decision to bypass the U.S. Open, the only hole in his major tournament resume, and he's going to be dad of the year, and he's going to be there for his daughter's graduation?
I mean, it's obviously killer for someone like me because it's just such a joy to cover Phil, follow Phil, especially at an event like this that's tormented him. But you can't fault him. I think it's, you know, it speaks to his priorities and you know, Phil's a family guy, and it's not just a cliche with him. And, you know, I think it was a cool and admirable decision. Now, it hurts for, you know, storylines and drama and interest, you know, entertainment. But, you know, I can't fault him, and it's good on him.
Do you have kids?
I do. I have three under four.
Three of them under four. I'm curious, would you make the same decision if you're Phil Mickelson at his age? And as we pointed out, you know, the U.S. Open is the only thing that he's got lacking in his, you know, in his career trophy case. Would you make the same decision?
Oh, man.
Because this isn't the birth of a child. This is a graduation. Because, you know, a lot of times guys, you know, a football player's wife will be due right around the week of the Super Bowl. If she goes into labor on the day of the Super Bowl, are you playing the game or are you there for the birth of your child? This is a graduation, not a small situation, not a small accomplishment, but a little different than bringing, you know, your firstborn into the world. Would you go and play golf if you're Phil, or would you be at this graduation?
Oh, gosh, you're putting me on the spot here.
You didn't know you were getting this one when you signed up for this interview, did you?
Yeah, no. If I'm making $100 million a year, I might donate a new wing to the school and tell them to move it to Tuesday. I don't know. I guess I probably would make the same decision as Phil if I've had the career he's had based upon he stayed and know you got some more U.S. Open venues that you like coming up.
Fair enough. That's an honest answer, and I can certainly respect that. I got to say, though, just right now, and it's hard for me because I've got a 15-year-old who's a couple of years away from graduating high school, let alone college. Right now, I feel like I'd golf. I'm not just going out to the, you know, on the weekend for with my buddies with a, you know, with a 12-pack on the back of the cart. Hey, I'm going golfing. I'm not going to your graduation. We are talking about a major. We are talking about what is, you know, what has been the core of your life, you know, in providing for your family for all these years. I don't know how the wife would take it, but I still think I might have to go to the U.S. Open. But
that totally makes sense too. I mean, this is the white whale of his career, this U.S. Open.
Well said, very well said. And Ahab is not chasing him this weekend. All right. Hey, good stuff, Brendan Porath. I really appreciate it. You know, if you're up for it, you'll probably have a ton of work to do, but maybe after we get our winner on Sunday, if you'd like to come back on Monday and analyze it with us, we'd love to have you back.
Yeah, I would love to. Thanks, Bob. I appreciate it.
You got it. Thank you. Thanks so much. Brendan Porath, SB Nation, covering the U.S. Open in Wisconsin at Erin Hills. Really, really interesting day today on the leaderboard. As we mentioned, Ricky Fowler at 7-under. And Jim pointed out 47 guys under par already. And that's not 47 guys finished, though. That's 40, or is it, Jim?
It's 41. They're not all finished, but it's the U.S. Open. And I'm not even counting the even par guys, and I know they haven't all finished.
Hold on. So let me make sure I heard that correctly. So it is 41 guys who are finished for the day who are under par.
No, some of them aren't finished. There's just 41 guys right now that are under par, which just seems like a lot no matter what.
It is no matter what. But obviously we're not assured that they will stay there. Because there's a bunch of guys who are one under, for example, on 7.
That's correct. Yes.
Okay. So you know, because if we have 41 at the end of the day, after everybody is in the clubhouse, 41 under par, that would be quite something.
Yeah.
So really interesting story. What about you, Kushlin? You got a little baby. You got a young baby. What if this was graduation? This is Phil's daughter's college graduation? Yes.
I believe so.
Not high school. This is college, I believe.
I think so. I'd have to double check that. But
I think it is. So if that is the circumstance, what do you do? Especially if you're Phil Mickelson, you've got major championships at the PGA. You got it at British, and you got them at the Masters, but you don't have a U.S. Open yet. You're not as young as springtime anymore. Lord knows how many more cracks at this you're going to get.
Yeah.
What if your back goes out the way Tiger's did?
Right.
And you're never going to have, you don't know how many other shots at this you're going to have. Would you get on this course and play Erin Hills, or would you be at graduation?
Oh, that's such a tough question. I'd probably have to lean on graduation on the grounds of...
Wow, I'm the only terrible father here.
because it's on the grounds. For me, it would probably be on the grounds of... Okay, yeah, it's the one major I haven't won, but it's the thing I do to provide for my family if I'm putting myself in Phil's shoes. But then I think my wife would kill me, probably, if I wasn't there. So.
Oh, by the way, I just found it. It's high school.
It is high school? Okay.
Not college.
Okay.
So she's not graduating summa cum laude from Stanford or something.
Right.
It's high school. And I'm not trying to diminish high school, but I'm just going to say it again. It's high school. You're expected to graduate.
Yeah.
It's there are going to be bigger things probably in this young lady's future, including graduating from college.
Right.
Sweetheart, Daddy's got to go to work this weekend. I will be with you in spirit, but I cannot wait to see you walk that aisle 4 years from now when you leave college and you go out into the world to make your mark. But Daddy's got to go to work this weekend. Do you understand? I'm kind of having that talk. I'm kind of having that talk with my sweetheart. I just kind of feel like it. I don't know why. Let me see here real quick. Mickelson had been holding out hope with the potential of storms over Wisconsin that there might be a four-hour delay that would allow him to watch his daughter graduate and then zoom across the country in his private jet to be there in time for his tea time. His daughter Amanda is a senior class president, not valedictorian, but still pretty doggone good. At Pacific Ridge High School in Carlsbad, California, she is going to give a commencement. Okay. She's speaking at the commencement.
Yeah, we had that a caller just call and say changer. She was the valedictorian, too.
What's that?
That's why she's giving the speech. A caller just said, I'm trying to now look for this to confirm this, but that she's the valedictorian.
No, that's not what it says in this story. It just says she's the senior class president. She's giving a speech because she's the class president.
All right, well, either way, she's giving a speech at the graduation, not just doing
that. That might be a game changer.
Yeah, that would be. Then I would definitely rock solid have to say I'd be going to the graduation in that case then.
Yeah. Now we all know the story. I assume most people know the story about 99. Amanda, his daughter, nearly caused him to withdraw from the 99 Open at Pinehurst number 2. His wife Amy was due with her as the tournament opened. Ah. Mickelson carried a beeper with him and pledged to leave it. Beeper, how funny is that?
I remember those.
Not a cell phone. Not a smartphone.
You youngins.
He couldn't just get a bzzz in his pocket text.
No. Nope.
Say, I'm having the baby. A beeper.
And then you had to go to another. Listen to this, kid.
You got to get on a car phone. Or excuse me. Then you got to get on a golf course somewhere and drive to a payphone.
To a payphone. Imagine that, kiddies. That's what we used to have to deal with.
No, in 99, there were cell phones. I know because I had one at least in 2000 when I went out west. But they were the flip phones, you know. They were the flip phones.
I don't think
or the
texting
little...
existed then.
Yeah, there were cell phones, but they had antennas. You had to open your phone and pull the antenna up.
Oh, yeah, I had one of those.
But anyway, he had a beeper with him. He pledged to leave in the middle of the tournament if necessary, even if he were leading. Payne Stewart made a 15-foot par putt on the last hole to beat Mickelson by one shot. Amanda was born the very next day. So Amanda just messing with Phil a little bit in birth and in graduation. The last time Mickelson finished second at the U.S. Open was at Marion in 2013, the week Amanda graduated from the eighth grade. Mickelson attended that ceremony, too, although that was on a Wednesday. He flew overnight to Philadelphia and arrived at 4 a.m. and took a quick nap before his 7-11 tee time. Took the 54-hole lead that week until Justin Rose surged past him on the back nine. That's so wild. But he's 47. Just to throw that in there, he's 47.
Right.
So, again, you know, I'm not saying he can't win more majors. Jack Nicklaus won his last major, however, if you're wondering. The GOAT won his last major at age 46. That was when he won the Masters,
right?
Green jacket number 6, in 1986 at age 46. That was Jack. Mickelson's 47. Is it impossible he can win more majors? No. Is it impossible he can win a U.S. Open? No. Is it getting tougher as the years go by? Hell yes, it is. And he has chosen to be with his daughter at graduation while she gives a commencement speech as the senior class president. Hey, good on him. God bless him. I don't know if I could do that. Well, the commencement speech thing may be a factor here.
I'm going to hope and think so in this case.
I'm going to throw it up on the Twitter machine.
Ooh, that'll be a fun poll result.
I'm just going to ask. If you're Phil under those circumstances, age 47, never won the U.S. Open, daughter is graduating high school, not college, high school, do you go to the tournament or do you go to the graduation? I'll put that up there during this timeout, which is coming your way now. We'll get a Sports Center. Hey, and by the way, in the Sports Center, we got more stuff to give away. First, congratulations to Bob Joyce of Oregon for the sweet deal. He is the sweet deal winner of the day. That means he is going to go to Sidelines Sports Eatery with two Toledo locations and one in Maumee. Don't forget, you can get your $50 gift certificate to Sidelines for just $25 tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock on the website, 1065theticket.com. But now I've got another prize for you, a pair of tickets to Saturday, tomorrow. You want to go see the Hens and Durham at Fifth Third? We'll give them to you if you're caller number 8 right now. 866-240-1065. 866-240-1065. Mud Hens and Durham tomorrow at Fifth Third. Or, I'm sorry, Saturday. Well, you know what? Today feels like Friday to me because I'm off tomorrow. So it's going to be Saturday at Fifth Third Field against Durham, and we're right back after this.
66-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza on 1065 The Ticket.
All right, 4:45, so we got 15 minutes of outstanding awesome left for you. Then we'll turn it over to Mr. Miller for drive time right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. So what do you think? I've got the question up. It's on Twitter right now. What would you do? So you can tweet the response to us, and we'll kind of tally the votes, but I would like your calls, 866-240-1065. You don't have to stay online for long. Just tell me what you would do. Would you go golf in the U.S. Open, or would you go to your daughter's commencement? She's graduating from high school. She is giving a speech because she is senior class president. Not valedictorian, as I understand it anyway. This is what was reported on ESPN.com. But what would you do? So the question is up on our Twitter feed. Would love to hear. Here's what I wrote, by the way. Phil Mickelson is 47 years old. You got to know all the facts. Phil is 47, has never won the U.S. Open, is skipping the Open to attend daughter's HS graduation. What would you do and why? Your choices are A, daughter's commencement, B, play the tournament, C, ask the wife. And that might be the one that I go with. I might actually
ask the wife.
That's kind
of my logic. C is kind of my logic here. I don't feel like dying.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, ask the wife. And you know what? Maybe I should redo the poll and add ask the daughter.
Hmm.
What kind of relationship do you have with your little girl? Sweetheart, daddy's got a very big tournament. I don't know if you talk to your daughter that way when she's graduating high school and still say daddy. Or dad's got a big tournament this weekend, as you know. everything we have is because of all of those trophies over there in that case. And my work on this tour, this is a very, very big deal. But your graduation is a very, very big deal to you. And as such, it's a big deal to me. I will do whatever you think I should do. Do you want Dad in the audience for your speech and your graduation? Or can Mom record it for me so that I can watch it later after I go win a great big giant trophy and a big multi-million dollar check for winning the U.S. Open? Which one? Or is that cruel to put that on your daughter? And your 18-year-old is looking at you like, I don't know, Dad. Of course I want you there, but if you want to golf, and then she turns it around on you, right? If you've got a teenage daughter, you know they'll do that. They'll turn it around on you. Dad, of course I want you there, but I know what you want to do, so you go ahead and do what you think is right. She'll turn it right around on you and give you the guilt trip. I want you there, Dad, but whatever makes you happy. You know, and it's just like in your face. You tried to put this on me. I'm putting it on you. And just so you know, I'll say that I support your decision if you go play golf. But when your grandchild is graduating, I will be telling them, as their father is there, that my dad wasn't there for mine. And she'll play the mind games. Oh, that's wrong. It's wrong. I feel bad. I mean, God bless Phil Mickelson. Truly, truly, truly a great father. Obviously, he's doing the right thing for his family situation. And you know what? Maybe what he's saying is, what do we do when we win championships? What do we really, really earn? Yeah, we make money, but he's made of money right now, right?
Yeah. I mean,
Phil Mickelson at 47 has won so many millions over the course of his career. It's not like he is worried about end of the month bills.
Right.
So what are we really playing for when we go into these tournaments? What really looking for?
Especially in this case, I like the way Brendan Porath, our last guest, it's his white whale. Does he want to be Ahab
Which
today?
Means what? Which means what if he is able to get this done? He's playing for memories.
Yep.
He's playing for the ability when he's 79 to be able to look at that case and say, remember when I won the U.S. Open at Erin Hills? Remember when I won the Masters in whatever years he won the Masters. Look at that one. Boy, that was a guy. I hit a great shot on 17 there to pull into a tie. You're playing for your memories.
Yeah.
When you're playing for these things. Again, it's not for the money. Those trophies are the symbols of your memories, the things that will bring you back to what you did.
Right.
So now the question then becomes, if you accept that, the question becomes, which memories are more important to you? The putt? And the applause around the 18th green for you, the applause as you hoist that trophy into the air for you, or the memories of your daughter hoisting that diploma into the air and throwing that cap into the air, and the applause is there for her. If you break it down that way, both things that I would be deciding between are simply for future memories. Whose memories are more important? The memory of my daughter graduating and giving that speech before a few hundred people on the graduation stage, the commencement stage?
Yeah.
Or the memories of people applauding me and saying, you rock, you're awesome, you won the U.S. Open.
And if it's in terms of, if that's part of the equation, you know, just spitballing here, yeah. If that's part of the equation, then even if he can't because he'll be older, you know, there'll technically be more chances to make that U.S. Open memory. There won't be another chance at this one.
That's exactly right. You're 100% right. You know, again, like I said earlier, they're decreasingly, those chances are, decreasingly
no question.
Likely that you'll do it.
Right.
When you're 48 and when you're 49. And
exactly.
Just look at the top 10 players in the world. I was going to talk about this anyway, but just look at the ages. You talk about being in a really golden age right now, even though Tiger is not part of this. Jordan Spieth is 23. These are the top 10 players to watch in this U.S. Open. Justin Thomas is 24. Rory McIlroy is 28. John Rahm is 22. Jason Day is 29. Hideki Matsuyama is 25. Ricky Fowler is 28. And then the old men of the group in the top 10, really, are Sergio Garcia, who's 37, and Dustin Johnson. Even Dustin's only 32.
Yeah.
He'll be doing this for another 15 years at a high level like this. And Hendrik Stenson is 41. So that's just, you know, the Associated Press top 10 to watch in this tournament. It's going to be harder and harder when you're 48, 49, 50 to play with these guys who are 28, 29, 30, 31, 32 and do this. So your time is kind of running out in that regard. But you do have a shot, and you never have another shot to watch her do what she's doing. And that's it, which is to graduate and make that speech. So the chances are pretty good that Phil is doing the right thing, as much as I'm you know, kind of saying I think he should go golf. But then again, maybe you ask the wife, maybe you ask the daughter, and you see what the family consensus is. Have a blind vote. Everybody put an answer in the hat. Nobody will know what you did. Put an answer in the hat. If I get three yeses to go play golf, I'm out of here.
There you go.
Nobody has to say who they are, which would be pretty doggone hilarious. Hey, Jim, do you know if there's any video of the blimp?
Yes, yes, I have.
I've seen the still pictures that remind me of the Hindenburg that I said to Brendan.
Yeah, and some of the articles, I know on the CBSSports.com article, I'm double-checking the ESPN, there were links to some people who, you know, filmed it on their phones or whatever. So they're it, and probably by now, I would think it's up on YouTube as well. Yeah, so there's got to be
all
video
I've got
of this.
All I've got right now in front of me, because I'm on ESPN.com, is video of the aftermath, of the wreckage there. And then, of course, a bunch of still photos of that as well. There's still photos of the blimp in flames coming down, but not an actual video of the event. So I'm just wondering if it's out there. I mean, no, I mean, this is rubbernecking. This is what we talk about. This is what we do.
Yeah, all right. In the YouTube search, I searched U.S. Open blimp, and the first one that comes up is somebody who shot the video of this thing going down.
So somebody does have it.
Okay. So you'll find it if you should be able to find it by now.
Yeah, and by the way, I want to say that I probably sound terrible for wanting to see this, but I mean it's the old adage about, you know,
and we were just talking about this last hour when you made the comparison with the fight in NASCAR.
Right, that's exactly right. People will watch it sometimes just in case something goes wrong when somebody zigs and they should have zagged.
Right.
Oh my gosh, watch that car flip. And people, you know, it is. It's human nature. You don't wish illness. You don't wish injury on anybody. But you are sometimes amazed by the spectacle of disaster. You know, it's why we watch boxing. Why do we watch boxing? For the jab? For the jab? For the jab? For the little hook? Or for the right hand that knocks somebody's mouth guard out?
Yeah, that one.
And sends them splayed to the ground. You know, spread eagle and unconscious. Oh, my God. That's why you watch boxing. That's why we watch MMA. We don't watch it for the jab. We don't watch it for the footwork. We watch it for the devastation.
Right.
That's why people watch NASCAR in large part. And, yes, it's why when we're driving on I-75 or wherever it is we may be, and we see one, we stop and slow. Well, we slow down anyway, and we take our turn.
Oh, yeah. Even when you tell yourself as you're approaching that, because this has happened to me before, I'm not going to look at it, not going to look at it. I'm passed by, can't help myself.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You just can't. And, in fact, usually if the kids are sleeping, you'll wake them up and say, look over there. I'm not joking. I did that. I was on my way back from Pittsburgh with my son, who was there for an AAU tournament. And I saw a car that was completely upside down, laying on its hood, and ambulances and everything else all around. I couldn't find the other car. Maybe it was one car collision, but it was so destroyed. My son's snoozing on the ride back from Pittsburgh, and I'm like shaking him. I'm like, look, look. He's like, whoa.
They gotta wake up, see this.
Because it's what we do. So anyway, that's the blimp story there at the U.S. Open. It's a terrible tragedy. God be with and prayers to and for the pilot who, according to what I read, has suffered serious injuries, including burns. He took this thing to the ground. He did not eject. And you know what? When we find out what the investigation, you know, reveals on this, I don't know why, but you've seen these kinds of things before. If we find out that the pilot did so because he knew that if he ejected and let the thing go wherever it was to go and it landed on fire on top of people or buildings or some other place where it might be.
Because you'll see in the videos, it goes behind some trees and literally on the other side of the trees is the course.
See, that's what I mean. If he took it to the ground knowing he's going to possibly die and certainly potentially, you know, suffer what he is suffering through now, injuries and burns.
Yeah.
And he did that to save other people. Then he's more than just a tragic figure in this. He's a flat-out hero.
Good call.
So just wanted to, and I don't even know who he is, but I just wanted to kind of point all that out there.
Yeah, they haven't released any names or anything on his identity yet.
Exactly.
Nor should they.
All right, well, that is all the time we've got for the extravaganza. Thanks so much for being a part of it. A couple of really good guests today from SB Nation. Thanks to Adam Stites, who talked about McGregor and Mayweather with us. Thanks to Brendan Porath, who was talking about the U.S. Open with us. Tomorrow, I am open, as a matter of fact. You know how we were just talking about kids? Yeah, graduations. Well, I'm taking my 2B junior on a college visit tomorrow up in Michigan. So, yeah, not UM, not UM, just if anybody's wondering. But I am taking my daughter on a college visit tomorrow, so I'll be back with you on Monday. Enjoy the rest of the tournament, and we'll talk to you Monday right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket. Have a great one.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.